You're listening to A Midlife Less Ordinary, the weekly podcast giving you the lowdown on becoming a cool older dude. The good times are not a faded memory. It's time to start living them again. And here are your hosts, Wayne and Trev.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of A Midlife Less Ordinary. My name's Wayne and I have my very own Mr. Glass waiting to say hello. Mr. Glass, are you there? Trev?
Shazam!
And the reason we're shazamming and Mr. Glass in is because after last week we spoke a little bit about Alan Moore, the graphic novelist, Trev, didn't
yes.
we?
Yes, a the writer, Harry Alan Moore.
And yes. Is he from Southend, isn't he?
No, he's not. No, you're thinking of somebody else. You're thinking of Warren Ellis.
That's right. It's similar.
He's from Southend.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
I'll edit that bit out. No one will know.
They've both got long hair. Or did have.
Yeah, that's right. That's where I'm getting confused.
Yeah, both very talented comic book writers. A lot of people on this show wouldn't realise that they've actually probably seen a lot of, obviously, Alan's work, and they've probably seen quite a bit.
Warren Ellis is a kick-ass in that, isn't it?
No, that's Mark Miller.
I'm getting there. I'm getting warmer. You can tell who Warren knows Ellis about comic books in this one, and he's the layman.
Warren Ellis wrote obviously that hasn't been turned into a TV show, Transmetropolitan, but he wrote Iron Man 3. Is it the?
I knew he'd done some big Marvel films.
He did that. He also did. He did Red as well.
Oh right, yeah. Oh yeah. So there you go,
Bruce Willis. And he's also done. Is it Wolf Castle? The vampire animated thing that's on Netflix.
Yes.
Castlevania. I'll get it in there.
Castlevania.
Yeah. He wrote that as well. So people probably wouldn't realise. But Alan Moore, obviously, is a lot more
prevalent.
Although he's done a load of stuff that hasn't been. Yeah, but films.
Is it an insult to call somebody a comic book writer as opposed to a graphic novelist? Or is that just splitting hairs?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so, I was having this conversation earlier about comics and stuff, and the thing is that people don't realise is back in the day, graphic novels were just collection of comics of an arc that was done. So you'd get the whole of the sort of Frank Miller's run on Daredevil with Bullseye and Elektra.
Not the Dark Game. God, for a minute, I just had Jim Bowen in there.
Oh, no, yeah, exactly.
You mean
Daredevil. In his red suit of his horns. Yeah, Hell's Kitchen and Jim Bowen. That'd be
wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I'd watch it.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, you could put a caravan in Hell's Kitchen. That'd be good. You could
park speedboat, that in there.
Not a speedboat because it's landlocked, isn't it? There must be harbours. There's harbours there. There must be harbours. But, yeah, that's the thing. There were collections of, even Watchmen was. Watchmen was obviously a comic.
Yes.
And then was just put into a graphic novel, but people just think of it as a graphic novel now.
Yeah. Is that to make it sound more mature and more acceptable?
Yeah, I think so. That was the idea, I think, of like DC's sort of adult line, Vertigo.
Yes.
Like Hellblazer come out on Vertigo, Watchmen was, Preacher was, obviously Preacher's, like the other, people get mixed, because it's very close names. You've got Frank Miller, the really old Marvel, not old, sorry, Frank, but obviously was very involved in the 80s and stuff and the 90s, who obviously, and he wrote Sin City as well.
Yes. Yeah,
Frank
yeah.
Miller. You've got Mark Miller, who's obviously kick-ass.
Yes,
Mark. Jupiter's Legacy.
Yeah.
He did that.
Is that the Wachowskis?
And then you've got... No, that's the
I'm
one...
I'm going right see, off my now, yeah. Sorry, exactly. No, just ignore
next week me. We're picking
I'll get one right soon.
About.
Yeah.
but yeah, and then you have obviously those two, Mark Miller and Frank Miller. You've got Garth Ennis, who wrote Preacher and a lot of the Punisher, you know, the Punisher movies?
Yeah, yeah.
The best one with Spacker Dave in, that was based on Garth Ennis's run. Something else has come. Oh, obviously The Boys is Garth Ennis.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And obviously then you've got Warren Ellis as well. So it's all quite confusing because the names are all similar.
So,
the other one that's made a big, actually Brian Michael Bendis, who wrote... Powers, which was on Sony TV back in the day a little while ago, which was a real attempt of trying to kind of make a serious, The Boys were just really successful with it, but trying to make superheroes in Lycra real, yes. And it just didn't have the budget, because what's the guy out of District 9? He's South African, Shana Copley, is that how you pronounce it? Copley?
Yeah, that'd do.
He was in it. And to be honest, it was a real vague, because I really liked Brian Michael Bendis' stuff quite a few years ago. And Powers was a great comic, really was. I thought when it was being said that it would be a TV series and Sony were doing it exclusive to Sony PlayStation channel, I thought this is going to be great. And to be honest, the mix of it just wasn't right. It was all the superheroes' costumes, like that Jupiter's Legacy got it right and The Boys have got it right, but it was just too camp. And you had like this really camp costumes mixing with gritty noir, and it just unfortunately just didn't work.
So what we got in common here, Trev, is that, you know, you mentioned comic books, and straight away some people will get the image of a geek in their head. And what we can take away from this is that you just mentioned some of the most renowned comic book writers, uh-huh. and they've all been turned into massive blockbusting movies or TV shows. So mm-hmm. without you knowing it or not, you lot love comic books.
Yeah, exactly. So whether you class yourself as a geek, I'm quite proud to be a geek, to be honest. even before it was fashionable, I've always been one. Just because it just went with the territory, I think, because obviously listening to heavy rock, they borrowed a lot from comic books and legends and stuff like that. And obviously the 300, that was another Frank Miller one.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Which people probably don't even realise. No. I think, to be honest, the only reason people would realise that they were comics is when they put them up at the start.
Yes.
So based on the comic. Otherwise, I don't think people would.
I don't think people take much notice. I don't think they do.
It's just
an intro, just get through that. And
yeah, it's a nice film. It's good.
Without knowing the origins. But we could go back centuries and say, oh, the Egyptians used to do hieroglyphics and that's part of the comic book culture. Yeah. We could go that far, but I find that a bit, that's not for us.
We were born then, weren't we?
Yeah, we were that old now. Yeah, definitely. You're a mummy and everything.
Yeah, exactly. But I've been called lots of different things.
Exactly. And don't worry, one of them. By the end of this podcast, I'll be calling you a lot worse. But also, what I think is more prevalent is when comic books became real part of popular culture, from what I understand, Trev, and I've got everything else wrong so far, but hopefully I'll get this
wrong. It's
the propaganda from the Second World War. It's Captain America and Marvel.
Very much so.
Because obviously the Americans wanted to show, we beat the Nazis and everything else. Yeah. So Captain America come out, very patriotic. And kids,
Hitler was on the covers.
Is he on the covers?
He's on the cover of the first Captain America. Yeah, exactly. This is what I'm saying. Now, obviously, if you're going to get a bad guy, you might as well use a real one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It's kind of, that's the... And obviously, the Red Skull in Captain America was part... Back in the day, he was involved with the Nazis. Hellboy, the same. Mike Mignola.
Yeah, great, part of the same.
Great writer, great... comic book writer. Hellboy, that was all Nazi propaganda playing with black magic and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, the Nazis have been, used quite a bit.
And we owe Stan Lee a lot, Trev, of course. I mean, just being in every single Marvel movie for about a second, he brought together the graphic artist and the artist, didn't he? The graphic novelist
artist together. Yeah. Stan Lee... was the sort of butter in the sandwich, if that makes sense. He kind of brought it all together. Obviously, my favourite artist of all time is Jack Kirby, who drew, you know, the 70s Silver Age, really colourful. If you've seen Thor Ragnarok,
yes,
that really sums up a Jack Kirby era, because it's really bright, there's a certain way. He was, and obviously Steve Ditko with Spider-Man. Because I don't get me wrong, I think your average fan that doesn't know that much thinks that Stan Lee is just Marvel Comics, and it's not far wrong. But then you've got all the guys behind him, like Steve Ditko and Chris Claremont and that, the X-Men, who were kind of really sort of Bruce team. Stan Lee was
a front man,
the captain.
He was.
But he couldn't have done it without. And I think, to me, the biggest influence after Stan Lee was Jack Kirby, because he is the image. yeah. of a bit like Brian Boland was the image of 2000 AD back in the day, because his Judge Dredd covers were the ones that everybody associates.
Yeah,
you know, obviously very quickly with Frank Miller, obviously like his influence on Batman was huge.
Yes.
The Dark Knight and that kind of stuff. So that he's Frank Miller was, you know, yeah, a big thing. Sorry, man, you were going to say.
No, I was just going to say the biggest statistics show across the world that obviously superhero comics are the biggest sellers. Obviously, and that makes sense, you know, hence why we have these big blockbusting Marvel and DC movies.
Comic cons and stuff.
And Comic cons, yeah. But did you know, obviously there's about an 80% swing towards male readers of graphic novels, which makes sense. But do you know when it starts evening out? So we got near enough a 50-50 split on one genre of comics. What would you say that was? Think our friends across to the east.
Oh, what, manga?
Yes, exactly. Manga splits the genders. I know we're not supposed to, perhaps it's gender neutral, but it's, you know. There's nearly as many female readers as there is male in the world.
Yeah.
You can see why the characters kind of evoke feminine, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. I think the funny thing is, and I won't mention the word hentai because that's like, look it up, boys. You'll enjoy that. The funny thing is, when I was young and into comics, because I've sort of faded in and out. It's always been in my background, but I've faded in and out on it. And no woman, no girl when I was a kid liked comics. No girl. I know they kind of, you've watched documentaries and they show, but now you've got great comic book writers that are female. You've got like females working in the comic book industry and are huge. Back then it was a total male dominated pastime.
Well, I think that now they're changing that by having more female superhero movies come out, and maybe it'll attract more females to
I think,
the
to
comics.
Be honest, the comic, I might be wrong if anybody wants to like message us and put me right, because I don't know everything, obviously, about this subject, but I think the X-Men was a big thing for getting girls involved.
Jean Grey,
Rogue, sorry. I think that was a big thing. Obviously, I was watching what Marvel have got coming up on Disney, and they've got a She-Hulk show coming out, haven't they?
Yes.
So she was always quiet. And then you've got, obviously, Alias. What was that TV show that was on Netflix? About the reporter sort of girl with her superpowers. Can't think what his name is. But the actual comic that Brian Michael Bendis wrote was called Alias. Yep. But they changed it to her name, and which escapes me now, to be honest. But yeah.
So it's there, again, isn't it? The change is happening.
Wish that someone would get the Silver Surfer right. As much as I love Doug Jones, and he played an amazing part as a Silver Surfer in one of the...
Remember we won him on here at some point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, the amazing Doug Jones. But there's no lie, Doug Jones is amazing. But the funny thing is, out of all the comic book adaptations, there's two that they can never get right. And one of them's the Hulk, although I really like the Edward Norton one.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And why have they managed to fuck up for Fantastic Four every time they've done it?
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
I don't know why.
They were too young in the last one. It was ridiculous.
I don't know. And it's perfect for a movie.
Yeah.
Doctor Doom and everything is perfect. It's just like, why can't they?
They'll have another crack at that, won't they?
Of course they will. You know.
Talking of having, we'll come back to that. The sort of bookend, Trev. But I think now we should go over to the see what's been happening in the week with the AMLO weekly.
Yeah. So let's get realistic. Let's get realistic. Comic book land. Let's get in the real world for a change.
So, Trev, I don't think we can avoid talking about Peppa Pig Gate. You've heard about this.
No,
it's okay, because I've actually, I'm probably going to get in some kind of trouble for taking this from a news site somewhere, because I know we're copyright and everything, but they won't know which one I've taken it from, is the way I'm playing it.
No, who gives a shit?
But Boris Johnson, we like to, you know, every week he's popping up on here now. But he carried out a speech at the CBI all about business yesterday, and he had his papers in front of him. I mean, this man is a professional speech maker. He doesn't make mistakes. And there's conspiracy theories, going back to last week, about why he did this. But basically, he fluffed all his lines, started apologising, and then started talking about Peppa Pig. And people are saying, I've got the clip here. And some cynical people are saying that he might have done it on purpose to detract from all the pressure he's getting to do with all this social care green agenda and everything else. And
you never know, do you?
You don't know because he is clever. I'm not being funny. There's one thing that man isn't. He's not stupid. I listened to some interviews from people that have worked behind writing his scripts and everything. One of them said that I've seen him before he goes in front of the camera ruffle up his hair and get into character. So he actually is a character. He's a caricature of himself. He knows that British people love that bumbling kind of Mr. Bean kind of thing, because all the rest are like John Major, the Mr. Grey that they used to call him, didn't they?
To be honest, I thought that, like, when he was coming into sort of predominance in politics, I looked at him and I thought, okay, what's going on here? It could be true straight away. There might be something in there.
Well, this is worth listening to. This is worth me going to prison for copyright theft. But, you know, listen to this clip.
You'll get raped by Mr. Big in the shower for this.
That's all right. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
So with safer streets, with great local schools, with fantastic broadband... Forgive me. Forgive me. Yesterday I went, as we all must, to Peppa Pig World. I don't know if you've been to Peppa Pig World. Who's been to, hands up anybody who's been to Peppa Pig World?
I feel like I put my hand up.
I was a bit hazy what I would find at Peppa Pig World, but I loved it. And Peppa Pig World is very much my kind of place. Very safe streets.
So you get the gist, basically, Trev. But what is going on there? It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
Someone's doing an impression of him.
Yeah,
and then just mucking about. That is incredible.
And then that is real.
I didn't know anything about that.
No, is it worth watching it? I've watched it about 10 times.
What was the Peppa Pig thing? Had he been there?
No, what they reckon is, again, because I've been studying this, how sad I am. This is the things I do for our audience trip, but I've been studying this. Somebody said is that he got lost. The ones that believe that he actually fluffed it said he lost his place in his speech and just lost it. Like what happens to us all? We all forget our thread sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, of course
he does. And they reckon that he just come up with the Peppa Pig thing. That's a speech he was meant to make later on in that day to a totally different audience, and he remembered it and just come out with that.
He lost himself and just come
out with Peppa Pig. I mean, but they're saying Rachel Reeves, who's never going to say anything nice because she's like the deputy Labour leader, said, "Oh, it's a scandal," and this. She's not going to come out and say, "I love the Peppa Pig World speech, Boris." You know what I mean? It's not going to happen, is it? So you expect that, but yeah, that's what some people believe, that he'd done it on purpose and it's part of a philosophy of conservatives to sort of forget all the other things going on.
It did sound quite staged, didn't it?
Yeah,
but
his breathing got laboured, though. That sounded real, like panic setting.
Yeah.
And he was going,
that is bizarre.
Forgive me.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very odd. But I had to play that. So I'll be in a Russian military prison soon because I played that.
Yeah, you
clip,
will. But, you know, yeah, so you'll have your hands on the barbed wire.
James Bond
out
after me, but...
exactly, man.
But that's amazing. If you get a chance to watch that on the news...
Yeah, that's incredible, man.
Watch that again. The other big news this week, I mean, there's loads of stuff we could have talked about this week, but I thought I'd bring up is, what's your thoughts on the Brit Awards now going gender neutral? So there's no best female and no best male. It's just, you know, don't be careful what you say here. It's just best artist. Now, there's a bit of me, if I look at it logically... I could look at it and say, well, yeah, why should there be a best female and best male? It should be just best artist, best selling, best whatever. But then there's a bit of me that's sort of saying, be careful what you wish for, because about a few years ago, Ellie Goulding won a best female artist.
Yeah.
And David Bowie won the best male. Now, there's no way she would have won against David Bowie.
No.
I think he got about 80% of the vote or something.
Of course he would.
So she wouldn't have got an award. So there's an argument to say, although it's very nice to have all this gender neutral stuff, there's people now going to miss out because there's only one award that's going to go between both genders. So too woke for you, Trev?
Yeah, to be honest, I like to be down with the kids and stuff, but when you think about it, just sometimes if it's not broken, don't fix it. Just leave it. You know, I don't know. Just as you say, that's a thing. But
there's a bit of me thinks it's great, but there's a bit of me that thinks that women probably end up worse off because, you know, what's happened at the other awards, like the Grammys and everything else with the movies where they've done this, is it's mostly men getting nominated anyway.
Yeah, it is,
so
isn't it?
It kind of takes away from the point they're trying to make. So,
yeah, I know things move on, but I don't know. I'm just kind of...
Not always for the best, though.
Call me old-fashioned. I don't know. I just don't know. It's just... I find it very difficult, you know, but then that might...
When you're a dinosaur like us, that's what happens.
This is it, yeah.
We'll leave that one there and let the audience decide. Tell us, let us know what you think, guys, about this, because Trevor and I struggle with this kind of stuff. I'm trying to get my head around it. I've tried to make it justify it in what they're trying to do. But you tell us what, if you believe woke society is a good thing.
Well, very quickly, it's really different styles of music, isn't it? As well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I suppose they could have different genres for that, but then you're going to have some like Metallica versus...
this is it. No, not being funny. Now you've brought up something totally, which I wouldn't have thought of now, mentioning Metallica. But there's not a lot of females in heavy rock and heavy metal.
No.
I think there's the girl that sings out of Arch Enemy. You know, there's a few. There's nothing. So basically, you've probably got 95% of the hard rock, heavy metal genre are men.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be the same for hip hop and a lot of the different genres.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. That's going to take a long time to level out. But there you go. Let's see how that one pans out. Yeah, and that sums up the news for this week. So, Trev, I think we're going to go straight into finding out where you've been spending your time in front of the plasma screen this week.
In the toilet.
With your six, is that where you, oh dear, we're not allowed to talk about them channels. With the AMLO stream of the week. So Trev, lay it on me. What have you been watching this week apart from
As we're doing a little bit of the segment about comic books, Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings. The new Marvel Kung Fu thing. Good. Liked it. Looked good. Little bit of humour in it. What I liked about it is it really kind of felt like an old kind of Kung Fu movie.
Yes.
Very, very Hong Kong.
Good wire
Not
work,
quite
isn't
Shaw
it?
Brothers. Yeah. But yeah, had a kind of real... Again, it lost it a bit at the end with the dragons, but then there is a big influence in Oriental culture with dragons, I suppose. But every time there is like an Oriental... based culture film, they always have to get dragons in it, don't they?
Okay,
we've done this, but I'd check Definitely it out. The guy in it's really good. There's quite a few kind of famous Michelle Yeoh's in it. The dude in it, that's his dad, he's quite a famous sort of, I don't know if he's Korean or Japanese or Chinese, but he's been in a lot of movies.
Michelle,
not at all. No, not at all.
When you think of like
using Star Trek and stuff,
what was that first big? Yeah, exactly. What was the first big Hollywood
Crouching Tiger?
Yeah, that was it. That was in the 90s.
Yeah,
and she looks the same.
House,
really,
a thousand, the House of
a Thousand Daggers.
A Thousand Daggers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like both of those movies.
Yeah, very good. She's very good.
So where's Chow Yun Fat gone?
God knows.
Is he working at a burger store or something? I don't know. A lot of noodle. That sounds like a
sandwich. Perhaps his name is not allowed to be said these days. Chow Young, slightly over obese. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Maybe he's not allowed to work anymore.
Yeah, Chow Young.
Slightly off the BMI scale or something.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a nice way to put it.
I don't know.
Just Chow Young fat, you fat bastard.
But no, I agree with you. It's definitely worth a watch. Good fun. Is that available on the Disney Channel, too?
It is, mate. It's not bad at all. Enjoyed it.
I'm going to give you one that you can watch on your day off work. I'm sure you'll agree, Trev, that it's a great movie, but you've got to give yourself 4 hours. And it's see if you can guess it, Trev, just as a little game. Is Sergio Leone's last movie? Have a guess.
Once Upon a Time in America.
It certainly is, yes.
Yeah.
Spaghetti Western auteur Sergio Leone's 1900s set New York crime epic was once considered completely inaccessible due to its four-hour length, staggered chronology, dense cast, and abrasive and violent content. And now that's it's more acceptable now than it was when he made that film. He's ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Yeah, Richard, the actor that was on, Richard Alloy, he was desperate to see the director's cut. And the funny thing is, I love Sergio Leone's stuff. I love the Westerns. Once Upon a Time in the West, I find a bit boring, but he's still a very good movie. And it looks nice. Once Upon a Time in America, I'm not that big a fan of. I don't know why.
Oh, God, I love it.
Don't know why.
It's a proper epic.
He's really good. It is good. Don't get me wrong. I like it. But I just don't think it just doesn't snap for me. I don't know why. I've tried to watch it so many times, which is hard because of how long it is. Yeah, it just obviously you're getting something out of it.
I like to be taken on a journey. I think it's just something to do with how you like your movies to pan out. And there has been criticisms like that of the movie, but by the same token, it's still a real epic movie. You get taken on a total journey and you believe in it. I'll just read out the synopsis of it for people that might maybe not have seen it. See if it's your sort of thing. In 1968, Noodles, played by Robert De Niro, returns to New York, an old man after 35 years of exile. Ridden by guilt, his cross-cut memories of the Jewish mafia's coming of age on the Lower East Side in 1923, their rise to wealth during Prohibition, and there, can't spell that, 1933 provide the epic background to a story of friendship and betrayal, love and death. And it's just an epic, but you must give him 4 hours to that. It's Sergio Leone. You know what to expect with a Sergio Leone.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant music as well. You know, you've heard, you know, I can see why Trev as well says he struggles with it a bit.
I like it. I really like it, but it just doesn't snap for me. Just doesn't make me want to see
hasn't
it.
Hasn't got the right pacing
again.
For you. And they say that Time Out themselves have said that. So you can't really criticise you for that.
I don't know why.
So Trev, what's your second choice for the week?
My second choice, I've only seen one of this and I was really, really looking forward to it. It is The Shrink Next Door.
Oh, I've not heard of that one.
On Apple. Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd, I've just got such a homosexual male man crush on Paul Rudd. Talking to people that don't age, like Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd doesn't.
Yeah, you're right.
I saw an interview with Ryan Reynolds, and he said, because Paul Rudd was voted the sexiest man on some magazine, and Ryan Reynolds was it last year, and he said, I'll give it up to the man that doesn't age. I don't know what he does. Probably drinks like whale milk or something, but he just doesn't. But it's about two shrinks or one shrink. And again, I've only watched the first one. It's not the sort of zany Will Ferrell thing you'd expect.
Yeah.
You know, you expect kind of like Step Brothers and stuff like that. It hasn't got that. I'm desperate to see all of them, but it's kind of more of a character piece. The start of the first one, Paul Rudd's bit at the start is brilliant. It looks really good. I can't say too much about it because I haven't seen it. I've only seen one episode, but considering I've been wanting to see it for ages, I love both of those guys, and it just looks epic, to be honest, in my kind of way. So if anybody agrees with me, then that's
the first episode's waiting to go, but it's a serial, it's on every week, is it, Trent?
I think they've only got three of them up at the moment. The first one was just great, so not for everybody because it's like a slow pace, but I got it.
We're all different, aren't we? We all like different things. My second recommendation is a movie, Trev. It's on both of mine on Amazon Prime, by the way. Mine's 21 Bridges, and that's starring the late, great Chadwick Boseman in one of the movies he made while battling cancer, basically. He made seven movies while he was battling cancer.
He did, didn't he? Yeah, he did.
And most of them are really good, and what a start doing that, you know. But 21 Bridges probably isn't one of the bigger ones that he made.
I've seen it.
I liked it. Yeah. I thought it was quite good. It basically plays an NYPD detective. After two criminals kill police officers during a heist, Detective Andre Davis is tasked with stopping the men as quickly as possible to try and prevent them from escaping. He shuts down all the 21 bridges within Manhattan to trap the deer on the island, hunting them throughout the night. I found it really watchable, quite exciting, and not just a normal, typical lame romp through the crime town. And he made, I say, he knew, obviously, when he became Black Panther, he knew that he was back going to have this battle with cancer. And you could tell, not being funny, Trip, but by Endgame, when you see him in that, and obviously he'd passed by that time, and you could see that he'd lost a lot of weight, couldn't you, in the last
season? Yeah, could you, yeah. Although, to be honest, it came out of the blue to me.
Oh, it did for everyone, Trip.
It's unbelievable. Like in this world of kind of information that you can just grab anything anywhere.
How can anyone keep it
secret? How do they keep it quiet?
Yeah, I know. It was just like wake up one morning and Chadwick Boseman's got. It's like wow.
Yeah, it took like
because he's Black Panther. It has an even bigger impact on you, doesn't it?
Because it does. It was just shocking, wasn't it? Yeah, it's just like how the hell did you keep that?
Great future. He was just about to become a Denzel. I think I do really believe
he was.
That.
Yeah, he probably was. Yeah, that. You're right. Yeah, well, Denzel the Dragon.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, because to be honest, he was in the James Brown story as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, that Marshall. Another one that's really good.
Yes. There's another one as well.
Where his sister, Saint to the King.
That's it.
That's really good as well. They're all really good. Watch any of his movies. Yeah, they're all great. He's a great actor.
As you say, he was. I tell you who he's taking the Denzel crown, though, now. He's his boy, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's trying to. I'm sorry, you're just not as good.
That's going
to
be. No,
good in bowlers. That was about it.
Yeah, that was good. He hasn't got the gravitas, has he?
No, he hasn't. No, he just hasn't.
To be honest.
He's still good.
He's still all right. But it's not.
He's not dense. So there's our recommendations for this week. I think you've got some good ones to get you to, and a lot of variation there. Trev, just coming back to sum up on the comics and things. So, look, we know there's the two sides to this. There's the reading and the enjoying of comic books, and there's the collecting of them. You've got a collection and a half, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, just quickly give us an idea of, you know, if you were at our age, I don't know if somebody would start reading comic books necessarily, but it's not mutually exclusive. You could collect them and perhaps have them as an investment, couldn't you?
It's funny because I think it was, I can't think what comic book writer it was or illustrator. It might have been Alex Ross. I don't know if it was. Alex Ross used to do these kind of really, if you've ever, you know, the like Marvels, I don't know if you've ever heard of that, like, or the What If. See, he did that kind of thing. And He drew like watercolored superheroes, you know, like painting superheroes. And I'm sure he said, because he's in the industry, he said that he'd given away more worth in comics, like as in like vintage comics and what they're worth now, because he sees it as a medium that shouldn't be collected.
Oh, okay.
Because they weren't back in the day. They were just pulp. So like he said, and what he said is he actually would get them for nothing, obviously, because he's in the industry, and then give them away so people would share the enjoyment and not necessarily would read something they wouldn't particularly be into. The collecting, it's difficult because I've got, as you say, a vast collection. I've got some really good rarities signed by some of them. I've got Stan Lee's autograph and I've got Alan Moore's. And I like that. But in the medium, what they are, see, I'm it's a difficult one for me because I like the adult thing. The Crow was a comic, obviously, and I like the adult thing. You know, like obviously, Watchmen's my favourite comic ever. But sometimes there is just a time for like good old capes and boy fantasy. Does that make sense?
Escapism.
Yeah, this is it. Everything doesn't have to be dark and brutal all the time because that wasn't... I think the guy that was responsible for that, a lot of it, was Todd McFarlane when he took over Spider-Man and then introduced Spawn, Venom. That was, you know, and all of a sudden it was all very dark. And then I get it, but yeah, going back, the collecting side of it... Are you asking me where someone could start?
Yeah, I'm saying, is it, you know, because I can't necessarily see people that listen to our show, you know, not all in the midlife necessarily, but you've been into the comics since I've known you, so 40 years exactly, or
yeah.
plus.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
you know, and I was into comics when I was young, but then I'd done what you did. I'd give them to my younger cousins or whatever, and they disappeared, and I've not carried it on. But you've carried it on, so whatever you say that you should enjoy them, not reading them, you have collected them, haven't you? And where would somebody start with that?
Well, to be honest, I think you'd have to start reading some of the classics first and see, buying graphic novels. Marvel do these like Marvel Masterworks series, where they kind of like put together a compendium of all the people that form what Marvel is today. There's like Jack Kirby stuff. There's Stan Lee. I've got loads of Chris Claremont, Frank Miller, and they're really nice looking books. So to have a row of them would start you off really well.
But the basis is it best to go to a comic book shop, a specialist one, Trev? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, definitely. And support your local ones. Yeah. You know, the funny thing is you don't know these things are going to be a classic until you get them. And then look at The Walking Dead. I've got all The Walking Dead from one.
Yeah, you don't give a stuff about Walking Dead, do you really?
No, I didn't.
Well, the graphic novel you do, but you don't watch the show for a start, do you?
No, well, no, I've gone off the graphic novel. I started reading it on about, I don't know, about number 50, I think. Yeah, but again, when I bought that, it wasn't, you know, the big thing that it is. These things become it. So when you actually kind of, when you are a comic book fan, by all means, take a chance on new stuff because that becomes your big classic. So don't be scared to kind of read new stuff. Don't just stick to Spider-Man and blah, because otherwise you'll never get new. That's one of the things I can't stand about the comic book industry at the moment. That's why I think people that want to look into it should take up and read some independent stuff, because Steve Niles, Robert Kirkman, they all come from independent comics. Yes. 30 Days of Night, I know The Walking Dead was on Image, but you know, it was independent. So I think you've got a good look at that, you know, get a kind of a good kind of grounding in the classics DC.
If somebody wants to get maybe a bit more mature content, Trev, like we spoke last week, Alan Moore and V for Vendetta, which probably is aimed at a slightly older audience, isn't it?
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Because of the content.
You know what changed it all was English comics.
Yes.
And I tell you that to me, and again, people can write it and can message us and argue with me, and you know, they're perfectly entitled to. But the thing that changed it for me was 2000 AD. For me, because all like Alan Moore wrote for them, and then all of a sudden, like DC got him to do Watchmen and stuff, and that's the thing. It was all kind of, but they were kind of writing comics for teenagers, could like I was, and I read like Judge Dredd and all that because they're all comic books and stuff, you know. And then all of a sudden, they were quite adult in their writings, and then so. And they were, and all of a sudden, 2000 AD was selling in America well, and then Marvel, and obviously the people that were writing for Marvel and illustrators for Marvel and DC and stuff were reading 2000 AD and wanted to bring that adult tone into comedy. And there was a real battle between traditionalists like Stan Lee wanting to, because he fell out with Todd McFarlane big time about Spider-Man, because Todd McFarlane wanted to take it into like an adult way, Spider-Man, and Stan Lee was like, no, you don't, that's Spider-Man, you don't take it in an adult way, you know, which I get. But 2000 AD, I think
I'm surprised Dan Dare hasn't been made into a movie, funny enough, of you saying that.
Well, exactly. Where's Dan Dare? You know,
exactly. Much bigger from our childhood. Definitely.
Petition to do it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There's a next commission for somebody to do that.
Who could play him? Who would you get to play Dan Dare?
It'd be The Rock, bald Dan Dare. That's the only actor out there. Even Scott Adkins. You remember Scott Adkins? We're here.
Remember Scott? Exactly. And you're
Accident
Scott.
Man coming so, too. But yeah, that's all. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's all good. Yeah. So, Trev, there you go. From the horse's mouth himself, one of the collectors that is. You know, I know has been doing that for 40 years. Yeah. High recommendations. If you want to know any further, Trevor will be happy to help with that. So write into amlopodcast.com, leave a message on the blue button, send us an email, give us some abuse, whatever you like. Thanks for listening this week, Trev.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on and talking about comics.
That's right, mate. Pleasure again, as always. Comics is one of my passions,
mate.
It is
your passion.
Jabber, 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 jabber all the time on this one.
See you on the next one.
Bye-bye. Excelsior.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please leave a rating and review and visit our website at www.amlopodcast.com to check out all the links and resources in the show notes. Start living them good times. See you next time.